Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, is anybody saved? Is anybody? People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved? Well, Well, the air I breathe be better if I'm not around to use it. Will the man be spared that spoke the truth? Cause he never did abuse it. As long as I wanna be saved, how can I be free in my mind? As long as I'm a slave, is anybody here gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, say it again.
Few days, well, nah, maybe not quite. I don't know how many days. Well, a couple of days is 2 days. So let's say for the last couple of days, I've been recovering from a unexpected sore throat, which is, let me try to swallow something right now. I'm about halfway there, maybe 50 to 60% back normal. So I didn't say anything the last 2 days on my podcast. All right, so it's Friday, and let's see. Today's topic, we're going to cover yesterday, too. I don't have any audios on, so I'll just cover it. But today, the time value of money, actually we're going to cover three things today, real quick. The time value of money. Camp, that's the title that we have here on Blog Talk, The Time Value of Money, which people really need to know that concept is not a new concept. The time value of money deals with the present value of money versus the future value of money and factors in inflation and all that. So we'll touch on that today. What else? Yesterday topic. Which adult playgrounds or playground village, okay, playground village, and then, let's see, oh, and ghost towns. Ghost towns of Texas in particular. And let's start with the ghost towns of Texas. All right, now, I lived in Texas. Some say I did, some say I didn't. During 4 years of college, my primary residence was in Canyon, Texas, at what was then called West Texas State University, now it's West Texas A&M University in Canyon, Texas. I believe that's Randall County. And Texas, and we did a, now, I attended the school on a basketball scholarship. It was like, they back then, it was like 1 year renewables. So, for whatever reason, if you flunked out, coach didn't want you back, at the end of that, you know, you're out. So, I didn't even play the whole 4 years. I played two. But I was covered financially the whole way through on that scholarship. So although basketball got me to Texas, particularly West Texas, okay, my primary reason, now I'm looking at life because it's been some years now, my primary reason for getting the opportunity to go to school in Texas, and I consider West Texas the real Texas. Now, I haven't been all over Texas, because Texas is a huge state, but I consider, but I've been to Dallas, Houston, those areas, and those places are Texas, but I consider West Texas the real part of Texas, like I said, although Texas is just huge because East Texas is totally different from, you know, what I've seen out west. Because up in the panhandle of Texas, you got, man, I would say that would be the first time that I experienced culture shock. But getting initiated to the culture shock that I experienced in West Texas, because for me, coming from the East Coast in a densely populated city, Washington, D.C., you know, Stetson hats, cowboy boots, or Western boots made from different reptiles, other than, you know, alligator or what have you. But the Stetson hats, the cowboy boots, the Western belts, I don't know if they have a proper name for them, but the Western, you know, big buckle belts, the Texas wardrobe, or the Southwestern part of the United States wardrobe, because in New Mexico and Arizona to a certain degree, and Oklahoma, there's certain, you know, dress codes you're going to see there that you're not going to see anywhere else. The cuisine, the Tex-Mex cuisine, which I had never, you know, the first time I had a burrito was when I was a freshman in college. As a matter of fact, I never even heard of the word, never heard of the word burrito until I went to West Texas State University in Canyon, Texas. And they looked appealing, so you put them on a plate, took a bite. Hey, been hooked on burritos ever since. So Tex-Mex food, which I love, but just a whole different scene. So that was culture shock for me. And some people don't adjust. Some people don't adjust, and, you know, they might leave. And that can go for anything around the world. So I would say the culture shock that Texas introduced me to, adjusted to it, liked it, and then when I went to other more far-flung places around the globe, then it was, you know, okay. Let me, what I do now is essentially, when you get to a new place, see how people operate locally or culturally. Anyway, so on one of our trips, because I was a mass communication electronic media major, we did a bus trip. Now, I had been through there when we played New Mexico State, which was in Las Cruces. So I've been through El Paso before, but that's in transit. We did a MassCom trip with just some of the MassCom majors where I guess we rented cars and we, or a van or whatever, 2, 3, 4 vehicles, what have you. And we made a trip down to El Paso where we stayed. And there was some kind of MassCom event down at Texas Tech, UTEP, and University of Texas, El Paso. And so El Paso was a, that was a very cultural experience for me too. Because you're in the United States, but it didn't, unless you were in a pocket of New Jersey or certain parts of New York City, it was just totally different than any part of the United States I had been to. And then we did a side trip to White Sands National Park. And I had never, now it, all I can say is it was the real United States. Because I grew up in Washington, D.C., where you got the White House, you got the U.S. Capitol, you got the Smithsonian Museums, this, that, or the other. That's not the United, it's within the United States, but what I like about Texas and New Mexico and Oklahoma, you can actually, those places, when you get to some of them, like White Sands National Park, where it's just sand dunes, white sand, well, they named it right, White Sands, and the sunset, just it's, if you haven't gone out of that neck of the woods, White Sands National Park, go visit it. Or State of Texas. Like, I haven't been to Big Bend National Park yet. Understand, that's very interesting. Well, anyway, I discovered many years later, because I graduated in 1980 from West Texas, that many years later, I discovered why I was given the opportunity to attend school in Texas, because of that one road trip when I came across an opportunity to buy some land in Texas. Now, that was a part of the reasons why, you know, that I was brought to Texas, but then Texas has over 200 counties, and once you step outside of like the Golden Triangle of Texas, which is like from San Antonio up to the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, back down to the Austin, Texas, over Houston, Texas, they call that the Golden Triangle of Texas. There are more people that live in that Golden Triangle of Texas than the entire state of Georgia. But Texas has a lot of little towns. So, with that in mind, and I just ran across this morning, Mentone, Texas, and I think, Willie, you mentioned the county that's in, and we'll go through that momentarily too. I'm bringing this all up because I think I found a tie-in to get us back on track here with our tiny house stuff. All right, Mentone, Texas is the unincorporated town in the county seat of Loving, Texas, Population as of the 2020 census, 22 people, which is an increase from 19 people in 2010. Now, some say the population is 15, but we'll go with the 22 figure. Now, Mentone, Texas, which is Mentone, one word, that's in Loving County, Texas. Okay. Loving County, Texas, which has a population, the whole county has 64 people as of the 2020 census. Okay. Now, the communities that exist in Loving, Texas, the county seat is Mentone. I already told you that. That's 22 out of the 64 people live there. They also have ghost towns, Hay Flat, Texas, which is mostly, they say, in Winkler County. There's Hay Flat, Texas, Porterville, Texas, and Woodyville, Texas. Woody, Texas. And they even break it down by demographics. The white demographic is 60 people. The black, there's no blacks, of course. They haven't met me yet. I plan on taking a trip there. Native American, there are 4. Some other races, 0. Mixed or multi-race, 0. Hispanic, 18. And they listed a total population of Loving for 2020 is 64. It was 82 in the 2010, but that dropped down to 64. Look, go to this. If you want to see the real United States, go to a place like Loving, Texas. Now, you're going to have a skill set, some skill sets, because you're going to have to deal with off-the-grid living. Now, let's see. Texas has a lot of ghost towns. So, and this is what I was thinking about, what came to me this morning. Is like Mentone, Texas, has a population anywhere from 15 to 22 people. So that's a community. It's not a large one, but everybody knows everybody. And we're talking about 15 to 22 people that are living a sustainable lifestyle. And they don't have to worry about a large, because with the larger the population, then the more rules and regulations, and that costs money. To have a police force costs money. When you're dealing with a town with 15 to 22 people, it's like Mayberry. Matter of fact, it's better than Mayberry, because in Mayberry you had a sheriff's department. All right. And places like Mentone, Texas, people police themselves. But yeah, you might want to take a look at, there's a map on this too. Ghost towns map, just type in any search engine, ghost town map of Texas, a ghost town map, Texas, or Texas ghost town map. So in the county that we have 10 acres in, is Presidio County. And I became, talk about how, you know, things happen. You're like, see, I went to Texas 1976. I was on my way to a tiny house retreat in Vermont the northern part of Vermont, like right near the Canadian border, and I was staying at a hostel, and one of the guys that was there told me about, and he was doing the Appalachian Trail. He told me about a town in Brewster County, Texas. Matter of fact, let me see if I can look that up now. And I can tell you the name of the town. Brewster County, Texas. And it, I mean, geographically, Brewster is larger than Delaware, Rhode Island, probably Connecticut. It's got a lot of landmass to it. Not a big population. They got like 9,546. That's the population, but the landmass is large. Matter of fact, really, Texas is bigger than what is portrayed on maps. It's a huge state. But in Brewster County, Texas, the guy told me about. Like I said, well, I was on my way to a tiny house thing. I only met this guy for like a day. Okay, at a hostel in Rutland, Vermont. And he told me about Terlinga, Texas, and whatnot. So when I got back to Florida, I looked it up, and I tried to buy some land there. And then the guy that I was calling about land wouldn't return my calls, so I forgot about it. And then I basically went on eBay. You know what? I was going on eBay for one other thing, and then I ran across a 10-acre patch of land in Presidio County, Texas, for 10 acres for for $2,000. That's the total price I paid, but it was actually $1,800. He was selling it for $180 an acre. But when you include the taxes and all that transfer, I paid $2,000 even for that. And I just paid my taxes on that, and my taxes were under $40 on 10 acres of land. Now, an acre, just to give you a visual on that, just imagine a football field. An acre is about the size of a football field. So, now, with that said, the nearest Walmart is 3 hours away in El Paso. But they do have Mafra, Texas, which, what, maybe 1,700 people live there, I think. Everything you basically need there, but I'm saying all that to say this. Little groups or people with something in common, because there's 108,000 towns in the United States. There are towns that are the size of Mentone, population 22 people. The towns that have populations of one or two people in the United States, out of the 108,000 towns in the United States, only 10 or 11 of them have a population of a million or more people. Jacksonville, Florida has now entered that list. Jacksonville is listed as having like a million people now. So there might be 11 cities. And then Austin, Texas is knocking at the door of a million. They have over 900,000. So let's say, let's just extend that to out of 108,000 towns, only 12 have a population of a million or approaching a million or more. That's it. Now in Texas, San Antonio has a million plus. Dallas has a million plus. Houston has a million plus. and Austin is knocking at the door of a million plus. But you step outside of those cities, okay, which are geographically, legally, they're geographically in the United States. But what I call the real United States, and what I call the real United States, a place where you can go regardless of race, color, creed, or age, and paint your own canvas. Now, painting your own canvas requires that you're going to have some skills or learn some new skills. Okay, because in Brewster County, Texas, Tulare, Texas, there's no Amtrak station, there's no airport, there's no Whole Foods grocery store, you know, there's no Home Depot, there's no Lowe's, there's no Ace Hardware, but the living is dramatically lower than it is in San Antonio and Waco and even Amarillo. When you get into these more densely populated areas, you know, you're paying for the comfort and the conveniences that, you know, you can probably walk to work in some of these places, or it takes you no more than an hour to get to some of these places. You know, people that live in Tulare, Texas, a lot of them grow their own food, so they don't need to go to Whole Foods. But they have that skill, or they're learning how to develop that skill. You know, some of these people are what they call boondockers. Boondockers are people that live off the grid, but they can live in a desert. A boondocker can live in a desert and have a Super Bowl party. They have dial-up internet. But Texas, New Mexico, and that there, I mean, Alaska, Montana, Idaho, Central and Eastern, what do you call it, Washington State, even California. Once you get outside of San Diego, once you get outside the Inland Empire, okay, Los Angeles County, that section, the Bay Area. Once you get outside of those areas, prices even in California really drop. Even here in Florida, once you get outside of Fort Lauderdale, out of the Broward, Dade County areas, Pinellas, Hillsborough County, Orange County, where Orlando is, outside, you know, Tallahassee, or Jacksonville, with Duval County, is getting to the, put it this way, the rural areas is where it's at, we can really live at an inexpensive price. But like I said, we're going to focus on that. We're next door with our 10 acres, but we also have 4 acres here in Florida. So we're going to look, organize the community first, because once you got the community organized, and that could be two people. I mean, you got towns of one or two people in this country. So, I mean, put it this way, urban street ball, basketball language. Or even if you're on a college campus, a high school campus, or whatever. Let's say you want to get together a game and play just a half-court game of basketball. Just a half-court game, 3-on-3. That's 6 people. I mean, like, going back to West Texas days, we go to the AC Activity Center at West Texas State. And you get it, you know, a full court game, that's 10 guys. You can put a team together within a minute, okay? Well, that's just, and then you get the game going. So that's the same approach we're going to use to get this tiny house building going on a consistent weekly basis, because essentially is you gather your team together first, and then you play. It's the same thing for organizing a town, or in this case, a village. Organize. You don't have to have a whole lot of people. Just get them together. If you got one other person to work with, then you just deal with that one person, and then other people follow up. So, check it out. Loving and Willie was Hudson brought it, the county to my attention, but it came across my radar again this morning. Mentone, which happens to be in Loving County, Texas, the county has 64 people. You know how many churches have more than 64 people? I'm not even talking about, forget about the mega churches. I'm just talking about, well, you got a lot of storefronts that have 50, 60 people. So we're talking about a whole county, and just one of the towns, Mentone, has 22. There's a whole lot of there's a whole lot of storefront churches all throughout the United States that have on the rolls 22 people. Because 22 people might not even show up every Sunday. They might get 5 or 6 for service, Bible study, what have you. So it's we're not going to play that we had despise not the day of small beginnings. So that's our strategy. Organize the team first and then go from there. Now, all right, that's on Loving, Texas, Loving County, Texas, Mentone, Texas, Brewster County, Texas, then there are ghost towns, and then we'll cover that on another day. Let's see, next topic that, adult playground. Now, these are G-rated playgrounds for adults, okay? G-rated. Maybe in some cases GP, PG, peril to guidance, but you can bring your kids along. And I'll explain that in a minute. But adult playgrounds, not my idea at all. I heard this in a clubhouse group that I'm a part of. And the moderator brought it up like this. You know, when we're in elementary school and there's recess, you know, we go out. Well, I don't know what kids do today, but back in my day, you know, we got on the monkey bars. Now, thinking back on it, monkey bars could be dangerous. But nobody fell off the monkey bars. Nobody got hurt on the monkey bars. I don't know where this overprotection came from. Something must have happened where some kid got hurt and some parent sued somebody or whatever. But in my day, okay, and all the times I got on the monkey bars, and all my schoolmates got on the monkey bars, nobody got hurt. Okay. So, but, you know, recess, you know, playtime and that, you know, you made friends and sometime lifetime friends at the playground. So she mentioned, I think she mentioned, because she's 60 now, and she never played on the monkey bars or whatever. Oh, no, she never learned how to play spades. So she mentioned an adult playground. Now, once again, this is G-rated, where, you know, you can come to a place and learn how to play spades or whatever card game or board game, you know, Monopoly. They got business board games now. But, you know, a place where, I mean, somebody brought up an obstacle course. At an adult playground. All right, now, here's the PG version of it. You can play spades and then maybe have a lounge there, and for people who want light alcohol consumption, like a beer, a Corona, a Bud Light, or whatever, or, you know, a mixed drink, a Long Island iced tea, You don't have to drink, but it's there. So that's about as adult as, you know, rating wise. That's the PG part. But other than that, it's just clean adult fun where you can go swimming, obstacle courses, play card games, play board games, somebody even mentioned basketball. I don't play it no more, but a place where you can basically keep physically fit, keep active, mentally active, spiritually active, physically active, an adult playground, an adult recess area, you know, where you can, you know, you might need a place just to collect, a place just to come and, you know, because I imagine that in some kids use recess to, man, they, you know, they had that word problem in second grade or third grade. They got stressed out. They didn't know how to figure out. But after they relaxed at recess, or maybe they talked to the smartest kid in class during that break, because that's what I did in junior high school. If I had a math class or a science class, man, it was a dude named Fagan. And I would use my free time, you know, that 20, 30 minutes, that break. Man, I find Fagan, can you help me with this particular problem? That's how I used, you know, when I got, you know, in those middle school years. All right. But so as an adult, if you got an adult problem, the adult playground, when you're doing an adult recess, you know, you can probably get that quiet time or find somebody that can help you solve that problem that they've actually been through it. So that's what we plan on using our vacant lands for, to have a playground village where it's, you know, whatever we come up with, whatever you guys come up with. Because my lane was, all right, I found the land and secured it legally and all that. That's my role, okay? Your role is to, all right, what are your ideas on making the best use of this? So I take notes and then we just see what works and what doesn't work. So that's what we were supposed to talk about yesterday. I had it all scripted out, but I am, my sore throat is almost gone. My cousin, I have a cousin that, because we talk every morning, and without fail, 365, and I mentioned it to her, and because we do a prayer thing to start the day, and I said, well, you need to lead it this morning because my, you know, my voice. So she mentioned, get some peroxide, and I happen to have an unopened bottle here, and she said gargle with it. So I gargled with it about 4 or 5 times yesterday. I need to do it today. I'll do it again after this podcast. But I would say I'm about 80%, 75-80% back. It doesn't, almost doesn't, you don't even feel it at all when I swallow now. So although I'm not giving any medical advice, I'm just sharing with you what my cousin shared with me. I happen to have some hydrogen, peroxide here. I gargled with it, didn't swallow it. Gargled with it about 4 times yesterday. Gargled, spit it out, and switched my mouth out with water after that. So after about a day, it because I did that yesterday. So this morning, I'm feeling 50 to 75% back to normal. So and then I watched some YouTube videos as well, which basically said the same thing she told me. So anyway, so that's why we're covering what we didn't cover yesterday. Now today, which lands on today, the time value of money. I'm going to suggest first thing that A, look up that, it, just as I said, time value of money, that's a concept. Excuse me. The time value of money, because it has two concepts within that, which we're going to get to in a moment. Matter of fact, I'm, the present value of money and the future value of money. And I think this they should teach this in school, but they're not. But for homeschooling, they can teach it. It when I was coming up, most people, well, first thing, I grew up, and there are two type of households to grow up in. I didn't know this until earlier this week. And I just had a birthday. Okay, and I'm in my 60s. So there are two primary types of households that exist on the planet. They're paycheck households, also known as employee households, and then merchant households. I grew up in a paycheck household. Well, with a slight merchant household as well, but I would say, you know what, I would say it was 50-50. But the majority of people that I went to school with, they came from paycheck households. Now, a paycheck household basically means your parents had jobs. A merchant household means your parents owned a business. My mother was a registered nurse, so that was her paycheck job, but she was also, today, she would be called a nurse entrepreneur as well, because she had a lot of what they called back then private duty clients that was her own private business. All right. But I grew up hearing go to school, good grades, and get a good job. That's all payroll or paycheck household lingo, vocabulary, talk. And one thing that they don't do for the most part in paycheck households is they don't talk about the time value of money and what the family house will be worth 20, 30, 50, 60 years from today. From when, well, let's say when you're 12 years old or even 15 years old. They don't talk about that. Here's what I want you to look up before we get into the time value of money. Is I want you to look up on your laptop or phone or whatever you have. Download it to your device, an inflation calculator. There's a number of them that are free online. Okay. All right, now I'm going to the one that I have on my phone. And once again, I want you to look up and download for free an inflation calculator, If you have children or grandchildren or great-grands, They need to learn this process. If you're going to leave the house to them, they need to learn this. When they're 12 years, matter of fact, if they're 9 or 10, if they can count to 10, they need to know this. I'm going to follow it with me. $1. Okay. Let's take the initial year. Now, I graduated high school 1976. 1976. And the year to this year's date is 2024. So $1 in 1976 today, it's computed, is $5.51. All right. So let's say your parents bought a house. Well, you know, let's look it up. Average house price of a house. Average price of house in 1976. Okay. The average price of a house of 1976 in the United States was $42,200. Okay, so let's go back to our financial calculator. So I'm just rounded up to $45,000. Okay, so $45,000 in 1976, and let's bring that up to today's price. That same house is now worth no less, according to inflation, $248,081.90. Your 9 and 10 year old needs to learn the concept of the time value of money, because their whatever job that they get, they're going to have to, once again, hear the concepts. They're going to have to decide on, number one, will I be able to get a paycheck job that will keep pace with inflation, or will I have to get a merchant business to outpace inflation? See, this is something that you're going to have to indoctrinate your kids, your grandkids, or your great-grandkids to this type of thinking as early as possible, because by the time you're 50, it's too late. Well, if you're still living and in good health, it's not too late, because it ain't over till it's over. But I'm just saying, it's easy to sort this stuff out 15, 20, 30, 40 years in advance. They need to be indoctrinated to this type of thinking of the concept of the time value of money. Now, the time value of money, there are two important concepts here just divide this, you know, because if you're 50 years old, or even if you're 40 years old in 2024, compared to your parents or grandparents, you virtually have to become a millionaire now. If you're among the living here in the United States, and you may as well throw in the rest of the westernized countries out there or cities, Nobody plans on getting sick. But if you happen to get sick and you don't have the proper amount of insurance or the premiums to cover the proper amount of insurance, you're going to need about $1 million. And if you get sick, and I'm just talking about homesick, a six-figure bank account will not last you that long, particularly if you got nurses coming in, not doctors, but we're just talking about basic, you know, help clean you up, feed you some meals, 6 days a week, 365. I've been through it with my mother when she was here. Seven figures can dwindle really fast if you, and she wasn't even hospital sick. You're gonna need about $1 million. That's not a lot of money. All right, let's get online and just do this to get a time value of money. And let's see. Okay, what do we have here? All right, I'm going to go to old Wikipedia. The time value of money is a widely accepted conjecture that there's a greater benefit of receiving a sum of money now rather than an identical sum later. In other words, for that 1976 $1, receiving $1 in 2024 is not going to cut it. You're not going to be able to buy the same amount of goods and services due to inflation. So for that $1 that you got in 1976, hopefully you didn't spend it. You invested it so it can grow and outpace inflation. It may be seen as the implication of the later developed concept of time preference. The time value of money refers to the observation that it is better to receive money sooner than later, provided you don't invest it, okay? Money that you have today that can be invested to earn a positive rate of return, producing more money tomorrow. Therefore, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar in the future. All right, the time value of money is among the factors considered when weighing the opportunity cost of spending rather than saving and investing or investing money, such as the reasons why interest is paid or earn interest, or whether it is on a bank account, bank deposit, or the debt. All right, now, within the concept of the time value of money, there's a whole lot more to it than I just read you some snippets of it. I'm going to let you look up the present value of money. What I'm going to now is the future value of money. The future value of money, now this is the definition of it. The future value of money is the value of a current asset at a future date based on the assumed growth rate. Investors and financial planners use it to estimate how much an investment today will be worth in the future. All right. External factors such as inflation can adversely affect the asset's future value. And then they got here, what is the future value of $1,000 after 5 years of 8% per year? And they have here 1,480. This is why, for instance, I look for things I can control. All right. I can't control inflation. Well, hold it. I can't control government-mandated inflation. I can't control the interest rate that any bank offers me, you know, interest on an account. If I put money into the stock market, which is overregulated and all, I can't control any of that. All right. However, I'll give you a couple of examples. One I've thrown out here many a time, Mignon Francois. She took $5. Now, once again, this was a woman with 7 children and a husband at the time. This was a woman that took $5. Oh, and the property, the house was going to foreclosure. This was a woman who took her grandmother's cupcake recipe and outpaced inflation, where she was able to get the lights cut back on, the water cut back on, kept her family fed, and bought the house out of foreclosure, starting with $5, because she was flipping cupcakes. She took the $5 and turned it into $60. That same week, she took the $60 and turned it into $1,600. That is she went from a paycheck household to a merchant household and was able to sprint past inflation and get the lights, the water, and get the bank paid off. Flipping cupcakes, starting off with $5. Because she was able to control the whole process. Now, if you got a financial problem that you're dealing with, and there's an infinite amount of ways to do this. You know, like when my mother passed away, her estate was worth 7 figures, but there was no cash. So to get the cash flow going again, it started with me renting out her driveway. And that had to be brought to my attention by the person that said they needed a driveway to park an RV. That's how it started. I had never rented out a driveway before. A driveway. Then I discovered there's a whole lot of people that are looking for driveways to rent out. So getting back to the future of value money, that's something that, like I say, you need to become familiar with. That's all part of the concept. Going back to your 9 or 10-year-old, more than likely they're going to dramatically need a lot more than what you need today. Somebody who's 40, let's say 30-something, 40, starting a family, and they're living in these, Dallas, Fayetteville, Washington, you need $1 million to buy a house there. I'm sure you can find a bargain here and there. I'm just saying. I don't write the stats. I just report them. Unless you know how to go out and create and manipulate the inflation, you know, they call it forced inflation. Like if you find a fixer-upper property at the right price, because you can go on eBay and find a house for a place like Cleveland, Ohio, Indianapolis, you can find a El Cheapo house for $5,000 or $10,000. And now it's got to be in the right neighborhood now and fix it up. you know, and double or quadruple the price. You can now, you can, that's called forced inflation. Or, you know, if you know anything about land, you know, you can go about it that way too. But get familiar with the time value of money, because, like I said, some of these people, you know, and some adults, young adults feel, man, I'm 25 years old, I'm 35 years old, I'm 45, I'm still living at home. Well, because none of your math teachers taught you, none of your parents taught you, none of your grandparents taught you about this thing called the time value of money. Now, we will have time value of money camps where, I mean, now the remote part is we can do a Zoom call and we'll get through all the theoretical part. Then when we meet face to face, there'll be a time value of money project where, okay, we're going to do this where we can outpace inflation within a matter of hours of creating something and selling something so we can keep pace with inflation. Okay. All right. Well, my voice is starting to run out, which means I need to go rest it, gargle with some hydrogen peroxide, keep quiet, and then hopefully by Monday I'll be 100% back to normal. But once again, look up the time value of money. Within that, the present value of money, the future value of money, that's all under part of the time value of money. And then download for free, app to your phone. It's time for me to take. I usually don't like to take medicines. God, I'm a natural type, I'll get out and get, oh, man, I forgot. Well, I'll get it later. Honey and lemon. Those things will heal you up, too. But anyway, an inflation calculator. And they also have, I think, a time value of money calculator. So get those two calculators. They're free, right online. A time value of money calculator and inflation calculator. Because your $1 today will be, it's not going to buy you as much as it will a year from now. I think we all understand that. But matter of fact, now you can go back to, let me see before we go, because we got time here. And I do. I think my voice can hang on a little bit longer. Let's see. All right, the financial calculator I have, it's valid through years 1776 to 2024. Now, here's the crazy thing. The United States dollar didn't even get legislated into existence until 16 years after the Declaration of Independence was. So let's go back to 1938. $1, and the reason why I'm going back to 1938, I'm a big Blondie and Dagwood Bumstead moviegoer, watcher, or whatever you want to call it, starring Penny Singleton. I mean, they're gone now, but Penny Singleton and Arthur Lake. So they started that movie franchise. It was a movie franchise. You can watch it on YouTube for free now. But that started in 1938. Here's one of the reasons why. I mean, it's good wholesome comedy, good wholesome entertainment. But looking at it from a male point of view, Dagwood Bumstead was a bumbling husband, but that's the way, though, you know, just like Sonny and Cher, but that's how they did. He was a bumbling husband, but he earned enough from his job at the Divis Construction Company or the Radcliffe Construction Company, because he worked at a construction company as an office manager. But he knew his craft. But he was presented as a bungling husband, but he bought in enough money where they lived in a nice neighborhood, in a nice house, fully furnished, picket fence. They had two children, Alexander, also known as Baby Dumpling and his sister Cookie, Daisy and the pups. They were a paycheck family. So, and Blondie, beautiful wife, materially she had everything she needed. All right, now. So let's go. Oh, man, come on, my phone. All right. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. So let's go back to, man, what's with my phone here? 1938. Oh, wait a minute. I wrote the wrong figure in. $1 in 1938 today would be worth, oh, hold it, 38. Would be worth $22.05. All right. That's a hell of a multiplier, 22. 22 times. All right, now, the average, I believe the Bumsteads lived in the house. Let's just go by average price of house in 1938. $3,900. Now, that's the magic number there, because Donald Trump's dad, Fred C. Trump, he built two basic cookie-cutter homes. One was priced at $3,999, but he built over 27,000 of them. In 1938, let's say the Bumstead's house was $3,900. So, because that was the average price of a house back then. So, let's go with, $3,900, 1938. Today, all right, that same house, all right, bare minimum would be $86,000. Now, inflation, because there's inflation and then there's hyperinflation. All right, so my mother bought her first house at $19,900. And she probably bought that 1960. And that house, based on inflation, because now is worth over $210,000. That's now the tax assessment though is over $400,000. All right. So it all depends on where that house is, but you can see there's a dramatic jump. So like I say, that's why, in my opinion, just my opinion, that 8-year-old is not too young to introduce to the concept of inflation, the time value of money. And you can use toys that they play with, Xboxes, whatever they play with, whatever, you know, blow pop, whatever their kids are into now, meet them to get on their level. Okay. Because they know the value of whatever they're spending money. Well, in other words, I don't know what the kids are into now, but whatever they're into, relate to whatever they're into, because whatever it costs today, 11 months from now, it's going to cost more money. So they might have to start washing dishes, cutting the lawn, what have you. And then start getting them interested in their house, because if you know, you plan on, they'll be prepared to inherit the house if they know 15, 20, 30 years in advance, okay, it's, you know, it's better to teach them now that you're going to need to have, your income's going to need to be 25 to 100 times more than mom and dad's several years from now, and start getting prepared for it, because if they're not, they won't be prepared for it. That's how a lot of neighborhoods got. So many neighborhoods that gets gentrified, it's a neighborhood where the parents, and that's part of our fault too, because a lot of us trust someone else, the public school system, or even private schools to teach our kids. Academics basically on the public school level, even on the private school level, is college prep. They don't get into the practicalities of life, of inflation. So whereas, like I say, dad would, well, going back to the dad with Bumsey thing, the bumps is dad was able to buy under the payroll, I mean the paycheck household plan. He was able to take care of his wife, pretty wife Blondie, two kids with a paycheck, $3,900. Okay. And back then his paycheck might have been $75 a week. All right, matter of fact, let's throw that into the calculator. Matter of fact, let's average income in 1938. Oh, wait a minute. 1938. According to the 1940 Department of Commerce report, the average per capita income in the United States in 1938 was $515, which was 76% of the 1929. All right. Income payments. All right, hold on, is that? Was that for the month? Average income in 1938. Okay. The annual income, average annual income in 1938 was $73. Okay. Well, this is weird now, because it says 1939. You got 5,300 in, all right, hold it. Average cost of home, all right, $3,900, but straight on that. Okay. All right, let's see. Dagwood was taking in, I think, $75 a week. So 75 times 52. So his income at $75 a week is $3,900. He was able to pay off a house. Well, if he got it, extra hustle that equaled his weekly paycheck. But now, wouldn't that be great if you had an additional side hustle that can pay off your entire house within 12 months? That's the way it was back then. All right, so, however, due to inflation and unions and a whole bunch of other stuff in the United States, it ain't like that no more. All right. So, and we'll go more into detail of this next week, but time value of money, we'll have a camp on that. And within the time value of money, the future value of money, and the present value of money on that. Now, on that note, that's it. My voice has held out. I'm going to rest. I'm going to go gargle with some more hydrogen for the rock side and just keep my mouth shut. And hopefully by tomorrow morning, I'll be back 100%. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and have a great, safe weekend.
Morning people wake up for peace and quiet. McDonald's breakfast people, we wake up for the sweet rush of getting that warm, delicious breakfast right before it ends.
Crush your morning goals with a steak, egg, and cheese bagel or any breakfast sandwich and snag another one for just a buck with the buy one, get one deal. Only in the McDonald's app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid once per day. Must opt into rewards.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.